Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
Hello and a warm welcome to Africa Link this Tuesday, 31st of August. My name is Isaac Mugabe.
And I am Eddie Micah Jr. We're also live on our Facebook page, DW Africa. Feel free to drop your comments and we'll read them whenever we can. Coming up on the program, Zimbabwe's main opposition party, the Movement for Democratic Change, has declared its own candidate winner of the highly contested election.
The results show beyond reasonable doubt that we have won this election and that the next president of Zimbabwe is Advocate Nelson Chamisa.
And a hearing of a lawsuit filed by Namibia's Herero and Nama people against Germany of a genocide in the early 20th century has begun in a New York court.
There's a lot at stake for both sides here. The Herero and Nama representatives do hope the court will rule in their favor, and the German government is extremely concerned that a trial could start and that Germany could be forced to pay reparations.
But first, let's listen to the news in brief, making headlines around the world.
I'm Crispin Mwakideo with DW News. Zimbabwe's MDC opposition party has claimed victory in Monday's historic election. Zimbabwe's Electoral Commission has said the vote was not rigged, but MDC senior official Tendai Biti on Tuesday cast doubt on the delay by the Electoral Commission to announce results.
ZEC is taking its time in transmitting results from polling stations towards and to constituency centers. And this delay is totally unacceptable, particularly in places like in urban centers like Harare. The results are not being moved from polling stations to command centers.
The announcement by MDC is likely to be contested by the ruling ZANU-PF, which has held power since independence in 1980. A suicide bomb and gun attack by militants on an Afghan government building in Jalalabad on Tuesday killed at least 15 people. There was no immediate claim of responsibility for the attack, which comes 3 days after militants raided a midwife training center in the same city. The city located in eastern Afghanistan has been the scene of multiple attacks in recent months that have killed dozens as U.S. and Afghan forces continue offensives against militants. Three candidates in Mali's presidential election claimed on Tuesday to have made it into a two-candidate runoff vote. This development adds to the confusion over a poll beset by claims of voter fraud and armed attacks that prevented thousands from actually voting in the first place. Mali has a history of peaceful elections in which disputes are resolved without mass protest or violence. But this election has been more closely contested than past polls, which raises the risk of trouble if candidates are unsatisfied with the outcome. This news comes to you from DW, Germany's international broadcaster. Three Russians carrying press cards have been killed in the Central African Republic, security and religious sources said on Tuesday. Their bodies were found on a road in the central town of Sibut after apparently being killed at a roadblock by unidentified men, AFP reported, citing an investigator. The Central African Republic is one of the poorest and most unstable countries in the world, with militia groups controlling most of its territory. Spain has now overtaken Italy as the preferred destination for migrant arrivals. A crackdown by Libyan and Italian authorities has made it more difficult for the migrants to reach Italian shores. Over 22,000 people have arrived by sea so far this year, according to Spain's Maritime Rescue Service, more than during all of last year. One migrant from Cameroon, though, expressed his disappointment at the treatment they have received so far.
Cinco días.
We haven't eaten or had a shower in 5 days. Man, this is hard. I just want to leave this port.
And in what can only be described as a David versus Goliath encounter, US President Donald Trump has suspended Rwanda's right to export clothing duty-free to the United States. This follows a decision by Kigali to increase tariffs on imports of used clothing and footwear from the United States. Despite the suspension, Rwanda will still maintain its other duty-free benefits under the African Growth and Opportunity Act, AGOA, America's flagship trade legislation for Africa. For more news and information, visit dw.com or download the DW app on Apple and Google Play. I'm Crispin Mwakideo.
And you're listening to Africa Link program coming to you live from our studios here in Bonn, Germany, with me, Isaac Mugabe.
And I am Eddie Micah Jr. Join us live on our Facebook page, DW Africa, and drop your comments. Talking about our Facebook page, we already see you, Valentino Valentine, and you have shown us some good love. Also, Jerome Martin, you tuned in. Welcome to the show. Now, we begin today's program in Zimbabwe, where political tensions are simmering after the opposition party, the Movement for Democratic Change, MDC, claimed victory for its candidate, Nelson Chamisa.
And as DW's Columbus Mavunga reports from Harare, Zimbabwe's Electoral Commission has dismissed opposition claims of victory and said results will be announced on Saturday, that is this week. The commission also said the whole exercise went on smoothly as expected.
Zimbabwe's Electoral Commission has dismissed speculation that the electoral process was being marred by rigging and other illegalities, hailing it a success. Its chairperson, Priscilla Chigumba, told journalists this Tuesday that there was a high turnout and some polling stations had finished counting the votes, contrary to both opposition and observers' claims that there was a lot of confusion in the whole electoral process. She also warned the opposition against announcing its own results of the vote.
The Commission would like to advise that we will announce the results as they come in, and all stakeholders are hereby reminded that it is unlawful to announce results because this is a direct contravention of the Electoral Act. We are absolutely confident that there was no cheating, we are absolutely confident that there was no rigging, and we would like to assure the Zimbabwean people that we as the Zimbabwe Electoral Commission will not their choice of leaders. We will not subvert their will.
However, Tendai Biti, a senior Zimbabwean opposition politician, accused the country's electoral commission of deliberately delaying the results of Monday's election so that they can tamper with them.
We have now received from our agents across the country results of the 2018 election. The results show beyond reasonable doubt that we have won this election and that the next president of Zimbabwe is Advocate Nelson Chamisa. We will now hope that the Zimbabwe Election Commission will follow its constitutional and legal obligation defined in the Electoral Act of formally announcing the result that is consistent with what we have gathered. We are very grateful to the people of Zimbabwe for showing faith in our alliance and showing faith in Advocate Nelson Chamisa.
Andrew Makoni from the Zimbabwe Election Support Network had this to say about the complaints raised by both the opposition and the electoral observers in general.
Some of the issues raised were really critical. For instance, the issue to do with ballot printing and movement of ballot papers to various polling stations. Those are genuine issues which we're raising. So I think ZEC need to be more open in terms of their communication strategy, in terms of their engagement with all the stakeholders in the election, and be more transparent in their processes.
For now, many Zimbabweans can only hope that peace prevails countrywide in the post-election period to avoid clashes between supporters of the opposition and the ruling party candidates.
Columbus Mbavunga reporting from Harare. And as you've heard in that report, you know, the opposition is claiming victory. We asked on our Facebook page, could any of the two accept defeat?
Mm-hmm. And of course, Isaac, you'd expect a lot of comments on this. This has been a big story going on. Jerome Martin says, given the history of ZANU-PF-MDC Alliance 2018, it's doing the right thing to update the results as they come. What's taking so long to count just 1,000 votes? No polling station had more than 1,000 voters.
Thanks, Jerome, for that comment. Ivonyo says, that has always been the issue of most African countries. I think he's talking about declaring yourself winner even before the people that's the Electoral Commission in charge of announcing the results have said so. He goes on to say, I think this is the job of the Electoral Commission. Let them do their job from there. Contesting camp can begin their move. For now, I think it's too early. Yeah. They should not manipulate the minds of the innocent citizens.
Exactly. Isaac, not to take sides, but this is a comment I think we can both agree to. The Electoral Commission is in charge and they should be left to do their job.
Yes, and as we had in our own Columbus's report, you know, the chairperson of the commission, Chigumba, said the results will be released this weekend on Saturday. This is a story that we'll keep on monitoring and bring you the results whenever we can. But one more comment, and it's a tweet from the man himself, Emerson Mnangagwa, he said, I'm delighted by the high turnout and citizen engagement so far, which exactly we are doing right now.
Exactly.
The information from our representatives on the ground is extremely positive. He's waiting patiently for the official results as per the constitution. Exactly. Keep the debate flowing on our Facebook page, DW Africa.
Okay, now, a hearing of a lawsuit filed by Namibia's Herero and Nama people against Germany over a genocide in the early 20th century has begun in a New York court.
The case shows not only how Germany is still struggling with its colonial past, but also how it is taking long the government in Berlin to fully take responsibility of its actions more than 100 years ago in Namibia. DW's Daniel Pels has been following this issue between Namibia and Germany for quite a long time, has been telling me what's at stake. Take a listen.
There's a lot at stake for both sides here. The Herero and Nama representatives do hope that a trial will start and that the court will rule in their favor. And for them, that means that they want to be included in the negotiations between the German and the Namibian governments about a German apology and also reparations for the genocide. And the German government is extremely concerned that a trial could start and that Germany could be forced to pay reparations. That's a kind of worst case scenario here in Berlin that the government wants to avoid by all means.
And how much pressure is on the German government at the moment now that the hearing of the lawsuit has kicked off in a New York court and a ruling, like you just said, might be made in favor of the Herero and Nama people, which paves the way for possible reparation?
Well, pressure on Germany is extremely high because this whole lawsuit has led to much more public attention, not just about the genocide. That is something that huge parts of the German population weren't even really aware of some years ago, something that wasn't talked about here in Germany, that was not covered in schools and the like. But also attention has really grown about the fact that Germany so far has never actually publicly apologized for the genocide. So I think the German government has lost a lot of its moral authority, at least in the eyes of many Namibians. Opinion polls there show that many Namibians are very dissatisfied with the German government. And also legally, the German government is concerned about the outcome of this lawsuit, because if the case would kick off and if the court would force Germany to pay reparations, it could send a precedent, because crimes were also committed in other former German colonies, for example in what is today Tanzania, then it was the colony of Germany East Africa. And so the German government is worried that also groups in other countries might start to file lawsuits against Germany in the future if this case works out.
Berlin has filed a motion to dismiss the lawsuit. Why is there a change of heart, since for a long time we know that it had refused to appear in court at all?
Well, the German government first hoped that the judge would simply throw out the lawsuit by deciding that the court would have no jurisdiction in this case. So the German government first tried to ignore the court. German officials, at least officially, never showed up in court when there was a hearing. And also, apparently, the German government refused to accept to be served with a lawsuit. But with pressure mounting in Namibia, also within civil society in Germany, and also the fact that the judge did not throw out the case, but demanded that Germany should show up there, I think the German government realized that its strategy was not working out. So, in fact, they hired lawyers and then they filed this motion to dismiss.
I was speaking to our own Daniel Pels, who I should say to you, Eddie, that I mean, he has been following this story about the Herero and Nama people were massacred, you know, more than 100 years ago by the German soldiers stationed in Windhoek, you know, and in the country. And he has tried to put everything in context.
Exactly.
First, German refused to appear in court, but due to pressure, it says, oh, I should come before things turn out against me.
Because, I mean, the pressure is heating up. And Namibians, first of all, so another point that Daniel Pels made is that there's been no official public apology. And even most Namibians want that as a sign of remorse from Germany. But that's not happened yet. So there's a lot to still dig in regarding this issue, Isaac.
Yeah, the implication is that once you apologize, what Germany is afraid of is that it
you
will pay
it.
The reparations, not only to Namibia, and then other countries like Tanzania that have cases, you know, pending cases with the country itself about its colonial past. They will file lawsuits, and it means more monies, more euros, and billions, you know, we're talking about billions, to be paid in reparations. What do you think about this story? Just go to our Facebook page, DW Africa, and tell us what you think about Germany accepting apology and paying reparations about this. Welcome back, and you're still listening to DW's Africa Link program live from our studios here in Bonn, Germany. I'm Isaac Mugabe.
And I am Eddie Micah Jr. And as I see, Yusufu Kabanzi, you just joined us. You've put a comment out there. We'll read it when we have some time. Keep joining us live on our DW Facebook page. Coming up in the next 15 minutes, a Nigerian startup is connecting farmers to investors to increase yield, and it seems to be working.
We used to do 2,000 birds on our own before now. We're producing 2,000 birds every 7-8 weeks. But right now, with Farm Crowdy, we're producing basically 4,000 birds every 5 to 6 weeks. The birds are ready for cropping.
And we'll also be hearing how some undocumented African migrants in Spain are hustling to survive, whether they are following the law or breaking it. Just don't go away. Stay with us.
Definitely do stay with us. But first, let's go to Tamale in northern Ghana, where authorities have suspended an operation to clear children off the streets. The assembly initially imposed a 10 p.m. curfew on the children, during which many were rescued and reunited with their parents since the operation started in May this year.
And of course, this came after there was a public backlash amid concerns about where some kids will be taken to after they were removed from the streets. Many felt that there was no plan put in place to take care of the children who had no family support or had worse living conditions at home. Our correspondent Maxwell Souk has more on this.
The suspension of the operation was announced during the second General Assembly of the Tamale Metropolitan Assembly last week by the mayor of Tamale, Idrisu Musa Superior.
This battle I've lost it. And the reason I've lost it is that it lacks public support. The representatives of the people are not interested. They are nowhere to be found. Nobody is encouraging me to do good things. Every single day I have been lambasted by politicians and the citizens of Tamale. And I tell you, I'm a human being. On this one, I have lost it. I don't think I can continue.
The mayor and the assembly came under intense public bashing for initiating the move. Prosper Kwesi Oye, director of the Social Welfare Department in the Northern Region, is not in support of children living in the streets, but he thinks the initial decision was rushed.
We don't have a shelter, because when you get the children, obviously you need to do some social inquiry. Even when you send them to their various homes, at times the problem is bigger than you may think. The push factor is there. So that is another dimension of the whole thing. But within our setup, at least we need a shelter where we can keep them and then do all the things that are necessary. Some of them may even be sick, all right? Where do we keep them?
Tamale, unlike any other city in Ghana, is battling with the growing number of children living on the streets. 14-year-old Abdallah Ibrahim has been sleeping in the street corners for more than a decade now.
This is my 12th year sleeping on the streets. I don't even know where my parents are. Whether they are alive or dead, I don't know.
There are no official figures on the exact number of children living on the streets in this city. Most of them use the lorry stations as their sleeping places, says Abdallah Shaibu, Kumasi station master at the main lorry station in Tamale.
Children, the small children are sleeping here, girls and boys. All of them are there. Early in the morning by 6:30, when you are here, you see them lying down here. Under the benches, under the tables are here. All, they are here.
The Children's Act of Ghana is one of the substantive laws that put child protection at the doorstep of their local assemblies. The policy is guided by key principles of the Convention on the Rights of the Child, the Ghanaian Constitution, and the Children's Act of Ghana.
Maxwell Souk reporting from northern Ghana in Tamale. Now, Eddie, imagine this. A curfew imposed on children at 10 p.m.
You and I talked about this before we got on there.
I think it's too late, you know, for the kids. I think at least 5 o'clock, latest, you know, 6 o'clock. So anyway, this is what we asked on our Facebook page, what the future looks like for these innocent Ghanaians who have nowhere to go, and the city authorities think they can be off the street not later than 10 p.m. in the night. Oh.
Well, NYK Chukwuemeka says, clear off the streets doesn't mean remove them from the streets literally. That's exactly what this policy is doing. Maybe put them in schools or open a park or public playground. That sounds more like it.
John Chege thinks it was a good plan. The children should quit from the street. Some of them engage in robbery and snatching items from innocent people. They're also young and can be productive to society if they undergo rehabilitation.
Mm-hmm. And Isaac, you can understand most of these comments are going back and forth. But the ultimate thing is there wasn't a very big plan because some of these kids at home are not having a good time at home. They are being maltreated here and there. So they don't want to go back home. They want to survive on the street. So if you want to take them off the street, make sure you have some facilities, some jobs available so they can get back.
Exactly. And I think there should be more engagement of the community itself and the parents. First of all, looking at the underlying factors, why do they have to leave home and go to the streets?
Exactly.
Some of them come from abusive, you know, parents, you know, whether it's alcoholism, you know, daily beatings and all that. And so some they decide to say enough is enough. Exactly. The street could be better. Many thanks for your comments. Keep the debate flowing. As usual, the platform is only DW Africa. That's our Facebook page. We have still much more for you in store. Don't go, and we'll be back right after this.
Africa on the move.
Eddie, now let's talk business. Starting a business anywhere in the world is a daunting venture. And in Nigeria, Africa's biggest economy and the country with the largest population, business owners will definitely have enough customers. But finding investors is more difficult. But then came a startup called Farm Crowdy.
Now, Farm Crowdy is a startup that helps farmers attract investors with the aim of increasing their yield and doing good business. Now, we wanted to find out what it takes for such startups to survive in Nigeria. So, DW's Sela Onyeko visited a chicken farm to find out.
Okon Achibong owns a small chicken farm outside Lagos. He inherited it from his father and has done this work for 18 years. Till about a year ago, he relied mostly on his own money to run the farm. But then he came across Farm Crowdy, a startup that supports farmers by connecting them to investors. Since then, his output has doubled.
We used to do 2,000 birds on our own before now. We're producing 2,000 birds every 7-8 weeks. But right now, with Farm Crowdy, we're producing basically 4,000 birds every 5 to 6 weeks. The birds are ready for cropping.
The idea is simple. Individuals and companies who want to invest in farming can visit a website and choose a farm they would like to support. Once the farmer has sold his yield or produce, Farm Crowdy takes 20% of the profit and the rest is shared evenly between farmer and investor. But Farm Crowdy also takes some of the work off the farmer's hands.
I don't have to go scouting for feeds. I don't have to go scouting for medication. I don't have to go scouting for day-old chicks. So Farm Crowdy takes that part. So in a way, the relationship has been good, it's been profitable.
To make sure the farmers reach their targets, the startup has a team of agricultural experts. They check the farmers' books, see how the animals or crops are doing, and advise them on what to do. Temitope Ojo is one of the experts.
So I get to come to the farm time over time to see what is going on, to follow up with the farmer, and of course to send results back to her hand at the Farm Crowdy office.
Farm Crowdy's goal is to increase local food production in Nigeria, and it seems to have found its niche in the market. Almost 3 years after launching, they have 35 staff members and a relatively big office space in Lagos. But what does it take to start such a business in Nigeria? I asked Lotte Gors, who works for the German Chamber of Industry and Commerce and heads a department that supports local startups.
I think the conditions for being an entrepreneur are just a lot harsher than they are elsewhere. If you compare, for example, very directly to Berlin, where rent is cheap, an entrepreneur can try themselves out, test a little idea and see how it goes. In Lagos, getting office space, setting yourself up, making your way through traffic, pitching to investors. It's a lot harder to pitch to investors here because there's so little trust.
Tope Omotolani, one of the five co-founders of Farm Crowdy, knows the problem too well. When they first started out, she and her team had to first prove that they could do the job.
We started with friends and families and loved ones that believed in you and would, you know. But by the time we finished our first circle of poultry and were able to pay people back, we started winning trusts, and before you know it, people started coming back to sponsor all over again.
Today, the company has Nigerian, German, and US investors, and it's hoping to expand. Whether they truly manage to impact food production in Nigeria, well, that's something we'll have to watch and observe.
Stella Oneko with that report.
Focus Europe.
During the holiday season, undocumented migrants from some African countries ply Spanish beaches, selling fake handbags, sunglasses and watches. But they're often lucky to scrape a few euros profit each day. And over the next few months, there's likely to be more of them.
Spain is becoming the latest Mediterranean arrival point for migrants fleeing war and famine. The government aims to invest 30 million euros in an emergency plan to manage the many migrants entering the country. Nick Martin reports from Spain's southern coast.
Dozens of African migrants could be seen walking the length of the coastline numerous times a day, trying to sell anything from fake designer handbags to soccer shirts. One of them, Mohammed, who arrived in Spain 9 months ago from Senegal, tells me business is really slow.
Customers don't want to buy anything. Many weeks I don't even sell one bag. Many days I don't sell any sunglasses. You only make a tiny amount of money.
With no official paperwork, Mohammed's prospects are limited. And because Senegal isn't at war, just incredibly poor, he has little chance of gaining asylum in Europe. So given the option of agricultural work in Almeria, some 200 kilometres away, or beach selling, he chose the latter, selling handbags, sarongs and sunglasses to the thousands of tourists who come to southern Spain each summer.
Je paye 5 euros. Each bag cost me 5 euros. For each bag, I make about 3 or 4 euros profit. It's very small.
So with beach sellers unable to make enough money to support themselves, Spain faces potentially an even bigger humanitarian burden as it prepares for the arrival of thousands more migrants in the coming months. José Luis Rodríguez Candela, who sits on the board of the migrant support group Malika Ajoje, has noticed an uptick in arrivals over the past year.
Many more immigrants have entered since the central Mediterranean area has been closed. The Alboran Sea between Spain and Morocco is a much shorter and much safer crossing, and there are many more chances of being rescued.
Candela is hopeful that Spain's new government, run by the socialist PSOE, will be more sensitive to the migration issue than its conservative predecessor. In June, it allowed a rescue ship, the Aquarius, carrying 630 migrants to dock in Valencia after the vessel was turned away by Italy and Malta. The new government's also promised to improve the treatment of migrants arriving at two Spanish enclaves in North Africa. But while Candela would like an amnesty for migrants who reach Spain to allow them to stay legally, he acknowledges that many don't see the country as their final destination.
They mostly want to continue traveling to other European countries. Those who do stay cannot get residence and work permits for at least 3 years, and therefore find themselves in a situation where they can be exploited. Our organization is calling for them to be given temporary work documents until they obtain their permanent residency documents. That way, they won't fall into the hands of mafias or those who wish to exploit them.
While Mohammed is clearly struggling to survive in Spain, he's more concerned for his family back home.
Many days they don't eat. I wait for the phone calls. My family tell me that they've not eaten anything. It's really bad because in Africa there's no work, nothing. Here it's not difficult, but I don't have the papers. If I could get the papers, I could get work easily. We need money to get the papers to get work to help our families, God willing.
That report was by Nick Martin. And in other news, U.S. President Donald Trump has suspended Rwanda's ability to ship apparel products duty-free to the U.S. due to a dispute over Rwanda's increased tariffs on American-used clothes.
And there's one comment on Facebook. Alicia O. Patel says, at last, President, why do Americans think it is okay for people to wear their old clothes?
And Yvonne says, I think Kagame did what is expected from all African leaders to do because we depend more from foreign products while destroying our own. Many thanks for those comments and thanks to the production crew behind the scenes. I'm Isaac Mugabe.
And I'm Eddie Micah Jr.
Have a splendid day ahead.